8 of the female students, and it took their own life. 5 of the victims of the shooting died. It was a horrific national tragedy, and it was in the news for months to come. On the day of the shooting, less than 24 hours after the shots were fired, a grandfather of one of the Amish victims was heard warning some of his young relatives not to hate the killer. He said, "We must not think evil of this man." Another Amish man, a father of one of the children who were shot, said, "The shooter had a mother and a wife and a soul, and he is now standing before our just God." A few days later, an Amish leader in an adjacent town explained, "I don't think there's anybody here that wants to do anything but forgive." And not only reach out to those who have suffered a loss in that way, but also to reach out to the family of the man who committed these acts. Also, to reach out to the family of the man who has committed these acts. Later, a spokesperson for the government's family said that an Amish neighbor had comforted the robber's family in the immediate hours after the shooting and had extended Christian forgiveness to them. Amish community leaders visited and comforted Robert, the gunman. They comforted his widow, his parents, and his parents-in-law. One man of the Amish community held Robert's sobbing father in his arms for an hour to comfort him. This community has suffered a loss, and he's traveled to the gunman's family, and he's holding the gunman's father in his arms for an entire hour as this broken man sobs at the loss of life, the loss of his own child, and the actions of his child. The Amish set up a charitable fund for the family of the shooter. About 30 members of the Amish community attended Robert's funeral. And Marie Roberts, the widow of the killer, was invited as one of the few outsiders to participate in the funeral of one of the dead children. Our gospel lesson today reflects the kind of mercy that Amish Christians expressed in those days and weeks following this tragedy at West Nichols Mine. In our parable, Jesus describes a wounded man, beaten by thieves and left for dead along the side of the road. He is ignored, both by a priest and a Levite, as they hurry past him, for reasons that we have no idea. They were too busy, they didn't care, they didn't notice him, whatever. They hurry by. But then someone does stop to help him. And this person, of course, is our famous Good Samaritan. There are subtleties in this story of the Good Samaritan that have gotten lost in the sand of time. But the main point remains the same. Jesus says that in order to attain eternal life, you must And it turns out, and this doesn't get shared very often, but it's true, it turns out that not every Jew was taken into captivity. And in fact, the Samaritans are the descendants of the Jews who had been left behind during the Babylonian exile. The Babylonians left behind the poor and the powerless. They took with them in exile the royalty of the Jews and the wealthy and merchant Jews. And they left behind almost everyone else. So those remnants who stayed behind tried to hold on to their old ways. They kept the home buyers running, so to speak, hoping that one day their brethren would be set free and return and share the land with them again. Well, 100 years of exile is a long time. It's so long that when you split one people apart for 100 years, they have the likelihood of becoming two people. You see, they have two separate stories now. They've got two genuinely different cultures now. You've got a culture of we've lived in exile and we have pretended our faith for these 100 years and now we're coming home. And then you've got this other culture of we never left. We stay true to our roots. We are you. We're waiting for you to get here. Well, when the Jews got free from the exile, they came back triumphantly, and they were the wealthy and the royalty, and they said, we want our stuff back. And they took it back. They took back and refilled all the spaces that the Samaritans, the now known as Samaritan people, had claimed. And they did it forcibly. And hatred grew, because each of them had a claim on being the people of God, the owners of the promised land. They build monuments to, I'm more right than you are. I mean, they literally build stone monuments saying, they're wrong, we're right. Does that sound familiar? So, by the time that Jesus sat down and shared this parable, the Jews and the Samaritans had been arguing and fighting for 5 centuries. They had desecrated one another's holy places. They had ridiculed one another's faith traditions. They had ridiculed one another's priests. They didn't like each other at all. Can you imagine a 500-year grudge? I remember growing up as a kid, and, you know, I would have a grudge against one of my sisters for, I think the longest I ever had was like a month or two. And that's just some work, you know? And you just kind of forget, like, oh, well, maybe I did want much of this time. But 500 years is a long time. 500 years is inherited hatred. If you're hating somebody today based on something that happened,